Welcome to the Daily Tour Podcast for the 2010 Amgen Tour of California. The Daily Tour Podcast is powered by the Fredcast Cycling Podcast and Bicycle.net, and hosted by me, David Bernstein from the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. I'll be your host for daily coverage of this year's race. Once again, we'll ride with the pros and bring you coverage of some of the best bicycle racing in the world as the Peloton makes its way from Nevada City in the north to Thousand Oaks in the south. Over 8 stages, 800 miles, and tens of thousands of feet of climbing. The Daily Tour is brought to you by the Fredcast Cycling Podcast at www.thefredcast.com and powered by the resources of Bicycle.net. For your weekly audio dose of cycling news, culture, interviews, product reviews, and more, listen and subscribe to the Fredcast. And for more cycling news, product reviews, original cycling essays, go to Bicycle.net or subscribe to their RSS feeds. And now, here's today's episode of the Daily Tour Podcast. Welcome back to the Daily Tour Podcast for Friday, May 21st, 2010. And it is time to talk about Stage 6 of the Amgen Tour of California. However, before we do that, let's recap Stage 5 briefly, since we did not have a regularly scheduled podcast yesterday. Yesterday's Stage 5 went from Visalia to Bakersfield, and as noted on yesterday's episode of the Daily Tour Podcast, Lance Armstrong, famed cyclist and 7-time winner of the Tour de France, crashed out of that fifth stage, rolling just out of Visalia at the beginning of the stage. He did go to the hospital and have a few stitches. He will be fine and recover very soon and is fully expected to still be at this year's Tour de France. Yesterday's stage was 121.5 miles from Visalia to Bakersfield, and it was won by Peter Sagan from Slovakia and Team Leaky Gas. He did it in 4 hours, 52 minutes, and 28 seconds. Second place in that stage going to Michael Rogers from Team HTC Columbia, third to Dave Zabriskie, fourth to Chris Horner, fifth to Paul Martins, sixth, Tony Martin, seventh, Levi Leipheimer, eighth, Ryder Hegdahl, 9th, Jens Voigt, and 10th went to Rory Sutherland from United Healthcare, presented by Maxis, all of those riders coming in at the same time. As a result of those stage results, yesterday's general classification results found Michael Rogers leapfrogging Dave Zabriskie into the golden leader's jersey of the 2010 Amgen Tour of California in 22 hours, 56 minutes, and 59 seconds. Dave Zabriskie in second at the same time, and in third, Levi Leipheimer from Team Radio Shack, 22:57.09. Fourth place, Peter Sagan. Fifth, Mark Demar. Sixth, Janusz Brockovic. 7th, Ryder Hegdahl. 8th, Peter Stetna. 9th, Tom Danielson. And 10th, Rory Sutherland. Well, let's talk about today's 6th stage of the Amgen Tour of California. And as I mentioned on a previous episode of the Daily Tour, this is the Queen Stage. 135 plus miles, 10,000 plus feet of climbing, 7 KOM climbs, 2 intermediate sprints as the riders make their way from Palmdale in the Antelope Valley all the way up and over the Angeles Crest Highway to Big Bear Lake and the Snow Summit Ski Area. But before we get to today's stage and how it played out, once again, as always, we have our pre-race interviews, actually beginning with some post-race interviews from Stage 5. First up is Ben Day from Fly V Australia, who was out in the break in Stage 5. Our first question was, we wanted to hear his impressions about the day's race, because he got out early, he got in the break, and we wanted to know what it was like for Ben Day.
You know, every single day. You know, I came to this tour as support for my team. I didn't want to ride for GC here, and you know, Phil Zajacek's looking so good for the GC. I really want to be here to support him, and we got some of the fastest sprinters in the world, and we're stepping up to the big stage, you know, and we want to keep progressing and, you know, race internationally with these guys, and I have utmost faith in them. So, you know, this is my part here to do what I can back for the team, and so I've been trying to get in the breaks the last couple of days, but I tell you, there's you try and you try and you try and you bloody try again, and some days you just miss it, you know, like, it doesn't matter how strong you're feeling or what's going on, it's just sometimes it comes down to a matter of luck, and finally the move that I slipped in today was the easiest one to get into the whole week, and it went, all of a sudden it went, and the bunch just decided behind us that they were going to let that go, and we got quite a bit of gap there, and you know, at some point I'm thinking, because I knew from the final climb that it's pretty much a downhill run, or the climb in the middle anyway, that it was a long, long descent coming into the finish, and you know, I thought we had enough time to really stay away, but through my radio back from the directors, I heard that behind us, Radio Shack and I'm not sure who else, really split the race, you know, apart back there, and all the sprinters were left behind except for our guys, so that meant that, you know, we had to play our best chances on the day, which was me sitting on the brake and hoping that our sprinters would kind of catch the brake and have a good crack at the finish there. So I, you know, I did a little bit of sitting on there, for, you know, which is just part of the sport and part of the game of chess that we play. You know, it's cycling is just this big physical game of chess, I think. And you know, today there was a lot of tactics, you know, being talked about and conferred, and you know, pissing a few people off, and you know, coming into the finish there, I had an opportunity to have a few digs myself, and I attacked over the final climb with 30 kilometres to go and took Renshaw with me, and we were brought back again by the four other guys in the breakaway, and there was a few little attacks back and forth there for a while, and coming under the circuits, we you know, with one lap to go, I'm like, you know, do or die effort now. There's not much else I can do to help the team. So, you know, I gave it everything I had and managed to go away solo and had a good little gap there for a while, but just unfortunately just didn't have enough space on the peloton at that point. So, yeah.
As Ben mentioned, he was out ahead of the peloton as he came into the circuits in Bakersfield. And at a certain point, you realize that you are not going to be successful. And I've always wondered what goes through a racer's mind in a situation like that.
It's a sport where you got to really take your opportunities when you can get them. But there's a lot of patience involved as well. You know, like if you blow all your matches right at the beginning of each individual stage, and then you're not going to have anything for the finish. So, you know, I played the game the best as I could today, and you know, just. Unfortunately, the bunch was just a little bit too close to us coming to the finish there, and you know, the power of the bunch is always going to be a lot more powerful than the breakaway. It's just a matter of luck, circumstance, all those kind of things coming together, and sometimes you win, and most of the times you don't. So it's a very hard, challenging sport, but that's why we're in the game.
Our next interview was this morning before the beginning of Stage 6, and we had the opportunity to speak with Marcus Burkhart from Team BMC to get his impressions and what he expected of the day to come.
Today I think it will be a hard race because it's all very close, the front, and so they will attack on the climb. I don't think that they're going to wait for the last time. I think they will try something in the middle section.
We've talked a lot this year about weather, partly because the Amgen Tour of California moved to May in order to avoid inclement weather, but we've also talked about it because at the beginning of the week, the weather was a bit off for May in California. We wanted to know from Marcus's perspective if the fluctuating weather was a good thing or a bad thing for a professional racer.
Yeah, it's better if it changed from rain to sun, then it's better for the motivation. It would be worse if it stays only in the rain. So it was better that it changed.
The big buzz among cycling fans, the media, and also the racers is about the allegations that arose yesterday from Floyd Landis. And we wanted to know from Marcus Burkhart whether these allegations affect him, whether they make it hard to get motivated on the bike, or whether it actually has no effect at all.
Yeah, if I am on the bike, then I always give 100%. And then I don't think about this rumors or this stuff what is around.
Now, Marcus is racing for Team BMC, and as we've discussed both at Bicycle.net and the Fredcast before, BMC has undergone a lot of changes for 2010. We wanted to get Marcus's perspective on those changes and to find out what it's like to be racing as part of Team BMC this season.
Yeah, I'm really proud to ride for the BMC racing team. They formed a good team, and I think we didn't finish this for the next years to make it better and better.
And finally, one of the biggest changes that BMC made this year, of course, was the addition of Cadel Evans, the world champion. And we wanted to know what it's like riding with and for Cadel Evans.
Yeah, it's a really nice guy, and I'm proud to ride with such a champion who can go for the victory in the Tour de France. He was already many times second, third, so for sure he's a really good classement rider.
Now, speaking of the Floyd Landis allegations, we had the opportunity this morning to speak with Neil Brown. Neil is well known as the former editor of Road Magazine, now commentating and blogging for Versus.com. And of course, also he has his own blog, an occasional guest on the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, and a self-described big deal. But of course, Neil was somebody we wanted to interview this morning because of his close relationship with Floyd Landis, especially in light of Floyd's allegations that arose yesterday. So first of all, we wanted Neil to let us know a little bit about his relationship and whether or not he was surprised by the release of the emails.
I've known Floyd for several years. We've, for whatever reason, struck up a bit of a friendship, same wacky sense of humor, and we've just stayed in touch ever since I've been working in this industry. No, I was honestly surprised. I received the email yesterday out on Sierra Road on top of the mountain there, and it caught me by surprise, and I didn't know how big a story it was because I followed the rest of the race, the whole stage in my car. I wasn't following emails. I wasn't following the internet. Got back to the press room, and it had exploded.
So considering Neil's relationship with Floyd, we wanted to know whether or not he was surprised that Floyd would choose to release this information in this way, and if he has evidence, why he wouldn't choose to just go ahead and hand it over.
I don't. The only thing I do know is I asked when I've spoken to Floyd several times yesterday, and he says he's not the one that leaked that email, so he wasn't planned to send that email out and then show additional evidence. It was leaked, so that's why, you know, he also didn't back it up with any photographs, any physical evidence. That's what I'm surmising at this point. But again, he told me yesterday, hey, I didn't send you that email. It was leaked.
Now, this part of Neil's story is interesting because I had an opportunity to speak to some other folks who received the emails as well, and they confirmed that the emails did not come from Floyd, but came from an anonymous email service, and that while they've tried to verify the identity of the person who sent the emails, they have so far been unable to do that. Continuing our conversation with Neil, there have been sort of two camps that have been set up around these allegations that came out from Floyd Landis. One camp says that this is simply Floyd trying to exact revenge, and the other taking Floyd at his word that he's just trying to clear his conscience. And so we wanted Neil's perspective. Is there more to this with Floyd than just clearing his conscience?
Man, to be perfectly honest, I don't know. You know, I know him, but how well do you really know anybody at any time? You know, it's a bit different strategy, perhaps, of just getting leaked out there. And yeah, it could be seen as revenge some part, but he's been pushed into a corner. That's how he feels. You know, telling him he's been pushed into a corner and he's got nowhere else to go. He's like a, you know, animal, you know, so he's lashing out.
Something else that people are saying is that they feel that perhaps Floyd was upset because his Bahati Foundation team was not invited to be in the Tour of California, and therefore they say that perhaps Floyd is lashing out.
Yeah, I have no word on that. He hasn't expressed that to me at all. It'd be pure conjecture on my part if I was comment one way there. But he hasn't said, I've done this to hold a tour of California ransom if they don't let us in. He hasn't said that. The only thing, again, he said to me is, like, I didn't send you that email. It was leaked. It's out there now, so...
The other thing we've heard over the last 2 days is people calling Floyd's mental status into question. I've had people say, hey, did Floyd get drunk and send these emails? Is Floyd a nut job? Is there, you know, something seriously psychologically wrong with him? We wanted his friend Neil's opinion on those allegations.
Not a psychologist, although I do play one on TV. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, he's fine when I'm speaking to him. It's not like he's saying, oh, I got to wear a tinfoil hat on my head to keep the voices out, or, you know, I got CIA implants in my bedroom or in my head. He's laughing. He's basically the same guy I've known for the past 5-6 years. We laugh and joke about even past couple days about the random stuff going on. So he hasn't been acting crazy over the phone with me. So, but, yeah, I don't know. I can't tell you his mental status when I'm not around, you know.
I think it's fair to say that nobody's going to go racing bicycles unless they love the sport of cycling. So a lot of people are wondering why Floyd would want to take down the sport that he loves, or is it simply that he feels like the sport itself has given Floyd Landis a bad rap?
I think so. I think that's probably where he's coming from. You know, hey, I've served 2 years. I want to go back doing my job, a sport that, you know, you just said, and he used to tell me, you know, he loves racing a bike. And he can't. And that's just reality. He can't. Other riders have come back. Vinokourov, Basso have returned to the Peloton and winning, doing well. And so I guess he's bitter about it, you know, and like, hey, I served my time, but, you know, he's got nowhere else to go.
Meanwhile, of course, the performances that Floyd has had recently have been, well, they haven't been stellar. So it's not like his performances can validate him. We wanted to hear his friend Neil's response to that.
I think some of the times he's kind of laid it on the line for other teammates. He's a good teammate. I mean, I think Lance Armstrong would even admit to that when they were on the Tour de France team. So he's been a good teammate, good soldier for, like, Rory last year. This year, like in a race that was a really challenging event, the Tour of Battenkill, he got second, you know. So I think when he was hoping maybe to get into this race and show his real talent, his real skills, you know, so like on a stage like today, going to Big Bear, I think that might have suited him well. He lives around about in this area, so he probably knows that climb really well. But yeah, the racing here in the States, though, honestly, just doesn't suit him. He's a hard man's racer, you know, and 90-minute criteriums aren't going to suit him. You know, a 100-mile road race up and down a couple of hills aren't going to suit him. He needs something that's really a race of attrition, and we just don't have that many of that type of races here.
Well, we also had the opportunity to talk to yet another Versus commentator today, none other than the voice of professional cycling, Phil Liggett. And before we got into the Landis allegations, first, we wanted to know Phil's opinion of this year's Amgen Tour of California so far.
Well, as a bike race, it's terrific, and it's fight all the way, and I think a lot of riders have been very, very surprised by the speed of the race. And when you look at the two big pre-race favourites like Andy Schleck and Fabian Cancellara, who are running about 15 minutes behind as we speak, that's a big surprise. It's a tougher race than I think a lot of the visitors expected, but that's why they changed it to May. I mean, in February, this time last year, I was lying stretched out with just about on the verge of pneumonia, did my commentary, and I went back to bed straight away. I was really ill for the whole tour, and it was wet and it was cold. So, but it was a big gamble to come into May, because how would the Giro d'Italia affect the entry? The answer is it wouldn't affect it at all. And in many ways, the Giro d'Italia is also a good race because of it, I think.
In this year's race, we've seen a lot of new faces, new names, younger racers coming to the fore. And we wanted to know what Phil thought of this changing of the guard and what might be bringing it about.
I think racing around the world this year is changing. The odds seem to be moving across to the English speakers more and more. Australia is having an outstanding early season. They're winning the Giro d'Italia with a guy that most of the world would never have heard of. But I knew him when he raced for a small Australian team. He's a Tasmanian cyclist, Richie Porte. The Australians are going well here as well. They're a tough nation. The South Africans are riding well too, with Jay Thompson and with Robbie Hunter. So I think we're seeing a change of guard. The youngsters are coming through now. This Peter Sagan is an absolute phenomenon. And he's got another 15 years ahead of him. He's only 20 years of age. He's already in a top team. The old boys suddenly realized that you can't live on reputations forever. You've got to get out and do the stuff. And then the newcomers coming through, I think, aren't really afraid of reputations. These races are very difficult to control. There's no big solid team. I think gone are the days when Lance Armstrong and his Discovery Channel boys, or Eddie Merckx and his solo superior team, or Bernardino with Laviclaire, etc., when they really got the race and controlled it and frightened riders from attacking. Those days are gone now. It's a free-for-all, and we're seeing a much better bike racing season because of it.
Prior to Lance's crash yesterday, there is no doubt that the vast majority of the spectators on the road were cheering for the man of the yellow wristband. And we wanted to know Phil's thoughts about Lance Armstrong and his chances this year, specifically in that famous race in July.
Very, very, very difficult, I think, in all honesty. Lance has said this will probably be his last Tour de France, but if he had a good one, I'll guarantee he'd ride another one next year. Last year, you're absolutely right, it was the athletic comeback in any sport. To come back to the Tour de France in 2005 to 2009, a four-year gap, and to finish third on the podium was outstanding. We all thought so. Lance wanted to be first, so he wasn't seeing it in quite the same light as we did. But having said that, now this year has been a bad year for Lance. His build-up has been interrupted by sickness, by injury, and by crashes, and that's a problem for him now, because he was hoping here in California to do well. Hasn't happened because he's crashed out of the race. So he'll go to the I think he'll go to the Tour of Switzerland, between the choice between that and the Dauphiné. I think he'll choose Switzerland now, and boy, he's got to go well in Switzerland to be ready for the Tour de France. He's still coming back. He's always behind, and every time he looks as though he's starting to go, he gets another blow. He's used to blows, and he's got a very strong mental outlook on life as well as on sport. So, but he's going to need to be at his strongest now to recover from this build-up for the Tour. And I have to say, on the face of what we know, it'll be very difficult for Lance to break into the top six in the Tour.
And then the big question from a extremely credible and well-respected observer of professional cycling. We wanted Phil Liggett's opinion on the Floyd Landis situation. Any opinion on why Floyd might have done it?
Well, on the face of it, it's a poor case of sour grapes. I mean, it's easier to say bad things about people. I can say bad things about you. And then if I was Lance Armstrong, they believe it. But I haven't got a shred of evidence to support what I say. And that's the thing about Floyd Landis. Now, it's true, I've asked the organization. He was sending them emails. He was, there were sort of veiled threats in those emails. If you don't put our team in the race, I'm going to say things. He's done the same to Lance. He sent him emails. Done the same to Brunel. I don't know about Zabriskie. The UCI has been implicated, saying adversely accepting money and getting paid off. These are ridiculous accusations. Totally unreal. I know Pat McQuaid, the president of the UCI. He's vehemently against doping in the sport. He would never do that sort of thing. And if he ever found out it was within the UCI, I would suspect he'd probably resign his position. But it does make things so bad for our sport of cycling. It is really quite difficult. And so I just hope that Lance will do something about it. He's categorically denied everything. Brunel has denied everything. Zabriskie, who's never been remotely connected to drugs, has also been drawn into it. So we will wait and see. But at the moment, it's pure hearsay and innuendo, and it is absolute a travesty at the moment that Always Cycling gets involved.
Well, now it's time to talk about today's Stage 6 of the 2010 Amgen Tour of California, arguably the most difficult stage in the Tour's five-year history, with its seven categorized climbs, its first ever mountaintop finish, including an uphill headwind finish at the Snow Summit ski area in Big Bear Lake, California. The day began with a long neutral section, and then a 12-man break took off. That break eventually pared down to just eight, and they included Andy Schleck from Saxo Bank, U.S. national champion George Hincapie from BMC, Jacob Fuglsang, that would be Andy Schleck's teammate from Saxo Bank, Thomas Rabaut, who was in second in KOM points going into the day from Team Type 1, Carlos Barreto from Quickstep, Steph Clement from Rabobank, Jason McCartney, Levi Leipheimer's teammate from Radio Shack, and Matt Wilson from Team Garmin Transitions. I was riding within the race caravan today and had a front row seat to watch this break throughout most of the day. Barreto dropped out. Steph Clement dropped out. But no matter when I looked back and saw the break, what I saw was two extremely strong riders, namely George Hincapie and Andy Schleck, most of the day riding one in front of the other as if perhaps there was some kind of an agreement between the Saxo Bank and BMC riders. Every time I looked, there would be riders within the break grimacing, George and Andy never looking strained, always looking strong. Andy especially. At one point, I was stopped at the side of the road taking photographs, and as they came by, Andy looked my way, saw that I was taking pictures, and smiled for the camera. I also looked back several times to see Andy looking around as if taking in the beauty of the view, as if this was just a Sunday ride in the park for him. Very impressed with the way that both George and Andy rode this race today. Meanwhile, back in the peloton, it seemed that HTC Columbia was driving the peloton all day long. For most of the day, Radio Shack and or Garmin Transitions could be seen behind HTC, but it was the white, yellow, and black jerseys of HTC Columbia that was driving the front of the peloton for most of the day. Up in the break, it seemed that there were lots of motivations going on. Hincapie looking for a stage win. Schleck way down on the GC, perhaps looking for, well, maybe looking for a little bit of experience in advance of the Tour de France. Maybe just simply looking to gain some respect because he's had sort of a lackluster Tour of California so far. McCartney up there to protect Levi Leipheimer and make sure that there were people in the group for him. And of course, Thomas Rabaut obviously up there to collect KOM points and gain the KOM jersey, which is exactly what he did by the end of the day. At one point, George Hincapie was the virtual leader on the road. So perhaps Hincapie himself was not only going for a stage win, but might have been going for a golden jersey to hang on the wall. After the final sprint of the day, Hincapie decided to test the break and see whether or not he could escape. Despite the fact that he was reabsorbed, several of the break riders ended up falling off the back of the break until finally there were only three riders left in the break. Hincapie, Wilson, and Jason McCartney from Radio Shack. With Radio Shack leading hard at the front of the peloton, eventually, with just 25K left to go in the stage, the three breakaway riders were reabsorbed into the chasing yellow jersey group. Mark Damar then attacked within about 5K, and Wilson went with him. They were eventually dragged back thanks to the powering lead at the front of the peloton by HTC Columbia, and by the time they hit the Flamme Rouge, the peloton, well, this group was back together because there was quite a large gruppetto with riders shed out the back and strewn all over the road for 20 minutes behind the main group at the front. But by the time they hit the Flamme Rouge, that group was back together, and it was going to come down to what was essentially an uphill into a headwind bunch sprint to see who was going to take the stage victory for the day. At the end of the day, it was Peter Sagan from Team Liquigas taking his second stage victory of the 2007 Amgen Tour of California in a whopping 6 hours, 7 minutes, and 8 seconds, picking up a 10-second bonus for his stage victory. Second place going to Rory Sutherland of United Healthcare, presented by Maxis, with a 6-second bonus for his second place in today's stage. And third place in the stage going to Michael Rogers from HTC Columbia and a 4-second bonus. Fourth place to Levi Leipheimer. Fifth to Ryder Hegdahl. Sixth, Phil Zychek from Fly V Australia. Seventh to Phil Martens from Rabobank. Eighth to Dave Zabriskie from Garmin Transitions. Ninth to Jens Voigt from Team Saxo Bank. And 10th to Tommy Danielson from Garmin Transitions. As a result of today's stage placings, Michael Rogers is now wearing the golden leader's jersey from HTC Columbia in a total of 29 hours, 4 minutes, and 3 seconds. Dave Zabriskie is behind him by 4 seconds. Peter Sagan has now leapfrogged Levi Leipheimer into third place, 9 seconds back. Levi's got 14 seconds behind Michael Rogers. In fifth is Rory Sutherland at 29 seconds. Mark DeMar is in sixth at 32. Janusz Brockovich is in seventh at 35, also at 35. Ryder Hegdahl, Tommy Danielson, and in 10th place, Peter Stetna from Team Garmin Transitions. As mentioned earlier, Thomas Raboud from Team Type 1 is now wearing the KOM jersey with 67 points, having gone way ahead of Ryan Anderson from Kelly Benefit Strategies, who's now in second with 29 points. Peter Sagan now wearing the white jersey is the best young rider in 29 hours, 4 minutes, and 12 seconds. And right behind him, just 26 seconds back, it's Peter Stetna from Team Garmin Transitions. Peter Sagan leads with 49 points for the green jersey. Behind him, Michael Rogers with 38 points. Peter Sagan's got 49. And Mark Cavendish is in third with 32 points. There are a number of abandons after this stage. Tom Bonin dropping out very early in the stage. Also dropping out J.J. Hiato, Steph Clement, Francesco Chichi, Jackson Stewart, Teo Bose, Carl Menzies, a wide variety of riders dropping out after today's stage. After today's race, George Hincapie had a chance to talk to the press about the race, the break, and the course.
Yeah, the course was probably the hardest stage of the Tour of California up until now. And I saw early on that from kilometer zero that there was some strong guys trying to get away, and got away with this, Andy Schleck and Jakob and some good guys in the break. Unfortunately, two guys weren't working too much because they had team obligations, which is totally understandable. But in a course like that, you really needed everybody giving full gas. It was just relentless with the wind and the climbs all day. It was slow torture out there. Very difficult.
George was also asked whether or not he was the strongest in the group and what his feelings were about his compatriots in the break today.
Andy Schleck put a really hard pace up that climb. And I saw that some people were kind of struggling, as was I, but I just decided to test out the group a bit. And then I took it easier on the next climb, and those guys caught back up. But I definitely felt like I was the strongest guy in that group. Unfortunately, we didn't make it.
And finally, George was asked whether, if it comes down to the time trial tomorrow, who will win the race if it's between Levi, Dave Zabriskie, and Michael Rogers?
I'm not sure about Levi. I haven't really talked to him that much just because the race has been crazy, but I know both these guys. Well, Michael's been having, in my opinion, his best year to date. Even today you could see at the finish, he pretty much let it out from, 300 or 400 meters to go in an uphill headwind finish, which is a testament of how strong he is. And Dave's obviously riding great as well, so it's going to be an interesting battle.
And finally, race leader Michael Rogers visited the press room, and it was mentioned that he's having a great race, but the question was whether he feels that the race has been overshadowed by all of the allegations swirling around in the media. I kind of liked what Michael Rogers had to say, and I thought you would too.
I mean, all I can go on is the people on the side of the road. They're calling out Mick Rogers, they're calling out HTC Columbia. We come here to race. We're not going to let things that are out of our control affect us. We can control only the things that we do. And we've won a stage with Mark Cavendish. I've finished second twice, third in a stage. We've got the yellow jersey for us. It's a special thing in our team.
If you ever disappointed about the sport can't ever move away from
nobody, I think even all the supporters, the journalists, everybody. No one likes to see this kind of thing happen to any sport. You know, we have to move on. We have to bring out the beautiful things about this sport. You know, the great achievements. You know, the heroic efforts. You know, like a guy like George was out there all day. You know, they're the things that are beautiful about this sport, and they're the things we should concentrate on.
Great thoughts from a great leader of this year's Amgen Tour of California, but everything could change tomorrow as we are looking at Stage 7, the Los Angeles time trial beginning at 1 p.m. It's a two-lap circuit on about a 10.5-mile course, a relatively flat course, as the riders go mano a mano in an individual time trial to see who can gain time over the other riders in the race, definitely favoring guys like Levi Leipheimer, Dave Zabriskie, and Michael Rogers. Should be a great event. Lots to say tomorrow. And by the way, don't forget, for those of you who are interested, we are having our tweet up at Bottle Rock in downtown Los Angeles. Full details are on the website at www.thefredcast.com. In the meantime, this is David Bernstein from the Fredcast. Thanks so much for listening to the Daily Tour Podcast. We will be back with you with two more stages to go in the 2010 Amgen Tour of California. So long from Southern California. The 2010 Daily Tour Podcast is sponsored by EpicPlanet.tv, producers of the Epic Rides DVD series, Virtual Bike Rides, filmed on truly epic routes in scenic locations around the world. Epic Rides DVDs are great for winter training, rainy days, or any time you want to do a concentrated indoor training session. Right now, Epic Planet is offering an amazing deal on what they're calling the Fredcast 5-Ride Bundle. All five of the current Epic Rides, Epic Vermont, Epic Acadia, Epic Saguaro East, Epic Mount Lemmon, and Epic Rouge Roubaix at a truly epic price. Five DVDs or digital downloads, normally a $150 value for just $95.46. Get all five DVDs and the digital downloads, normally a $200 value for just $112.46. To get this amazing limited time price, go to epicplanet.tv/Fred, place your order, and use the coupon code Fred at checkout. That's epicplanet.tv/Fred, coupon code Fred, for an epic deal on epic rides. And now, let's get to today's show. Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Daily Tour Podcast, brought to you by The Fredcast Cycling Podcast at www.thefredcast.com and powered by the resources of bicycle.net. If you'd like to comment on today's show, please send an email to thefredcast@gmail.com or to jt@bicycle.net. This is your host, David Bernstein, from the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. So long from the 2010 Amgen Tour of California, and thanks for listening.